Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jesse Labayan. I'm in the enablement team. And my team and I, what we do is what we call fundamentals and windows. Fundamentals includes everything manufacturing related, performance, battery life, and some firmware work. So today, what I'm going to focus on is the work that we're going to do to enable you and us to deliver really performant, power efficient, and serviceable Windows devices. So my agenda will start with battery life, what we're going to do with you together to make sure your hardware is efficient, your design, your implementation. We're going to walk through some performance scenarios. So yesterday you heard, for those that were here, you heard Roanne Soans talk about fundamentals. Yes, it's great that we have all these features like Cortana and Windows Hello, but fundamentals, it's all about responsiveness and battery life. It doesn't matter if it has all these features, if the device is not responsive to the user, they're probably not going to be as happy as if the device is instantly responsive. Or if that the user expects the device to last all day, on battery, it's not 4 hours, it's truly all day. They leave home without an AC adapter, and they can come home with still juice in that machine. And I will touch base a little bit on firmware. So first, I want to ground our conversation in, there's things that we're going to do at Microsoft in Windows, and there's things that we expect you as hardware companies, you do in your designs, your silicon, and your components. So first, I want to ground all conversations. For those of you that have talked to me, I always start the conversation with, let's do a BOM comparison, bill of materials. You know, rather than just say, hey, how come my device doesn't compete with this device? Let's do a BOM teardown and ground a conversation right there. Then we can add operating system, firmware, and drivers to that conversation. So the areas that we work on silicon collaboration with the likes of Intel, AMD, and as you heard yesterday, Qualcomm. Hardware design and validation guidance. We've done some validation. We're going to share what we learn with all of you hardware partners. Modern standby is an area that we've enabled since Windows 8, and we continue to evolve that to add more features. Energy estimation engine is something we introduced in Windows 10, and I'll walk you through that in a little bit, and then et cetera, so on until videos. That's going to be our primary training material. In the past, I would provide you lots and lots of documentation, Word docs, PowerPoint decks. My team is going to focus on producing a lot of Channel 9 videos, short clips, 20 to 30 minute clips that are very direct and focused so that it's easy for you to understand and take action on the output of your result. So battery life considerations. First, you got to define who your customer is. Am I selling to an enterprise or a consumer? What is my form factor? Is it a clamshell? Is it a two-in-one? Is it a tablet? How big is it? Is it 11-inch screen versus 15-inch screen? We completely understand there's got to be some trade-offs that you make. You can't put a large battery on a really high quality set of BOM and sell it for $200. If that can be done, I'm sure someone would have done it by now. So we completely understand the trade-off, and that's why we start with who is your customer and what are they expecting from you. I'll use this as an example. Education. Where my son goes to school, they are not allowed to bring AC adapters to school. That means that whatever notebook he has to last the entire day of his school. Yeah, he does, you know, a first grader probably does different things than a high schooler, but it doesn't matter. They cannot bring AC adapters for liability reasons. So you need to know who you're selling your product to. Power modeling. We're still at the paper stage, planning. You got to be able to start with data sheets and eventually take that into a kit. I'll be talking about Intel's hardware development kit later on. where you can validate components without building a device. But it starts with paper. What does your design look like on paper? Is it going to hit your target? You define the target, we don't. Is it going to hit that 12-hour requirement from a school or a government entity? The last part is really, really important. We're not the hardware experts, your silicon partners are. The Intel, the AMDs, the Qualcomms of the world. They know their silicon. So what are we investing? In the Creators Update, Modern Standby, we're making some improvements, and I'll walk you through that. Energy Estimation Engine, our Edge Browser, Battery Saver, and more. So let's start with Modern Standby. What is it? We changed the name when we introduced a different type of standby state we call disconnected standby. Think of this as a standby state that every phone and probably every tablet in the world has today. Even though the screen is off and it appears off, it is not off. It's always running. We call that in the Windows world Modern Standby. Intel calls it S0IX. It's a feature in Windows that simply turns itself on when we detect a silicon that supports this feature. Intel's had this feature since Clover Trail, you know, Skylake, Kaby Lake. It still has that feature today. I also want to ground the conversation on the sleep. We define sleep in many states for traditional machines. S3, that's what we used to call it, sleep. For modern standby, we call it modern standby to differentiate it from S3 sleep. And then S4 is hibernate, which is still applicable in modern standby. So there's a lot of modern standby devices out there today in many form factors and price points. When we introduced modern standby back in Windows 8, we had a lot of requirements that kept that BOM really high, the BOM cost really high. We've removed all those requirements and left it up to OEMs to decide how to build their modern standby devices. So first, let's start with resume latency. How does modern standby compare to the other power states? Screen on has the lowest resume because you don't have to resume, you're running. When that display turns off, resuming to display on is very quick, instantaneous. Probably single digit, double digit milliseconds. Modern standby resume from a modern standby state to an active on state is really quick. S3 is slower. This is what we call instant on. This is the experience that you see when you press a power button on your phone and your tablet, and we're doing the same exact experience delivering it on Windows PCs. From a power draw perspective, it's the reverse. When it's active and the screen is on, of course, it has the highest power consumption. Modern standby, if done correctly, is on parity with an S3 machine. But the difference is modern standby machines, it is active. It is checking for your email. You can receive Skype calls. It's doing things in the background when it needs to. A device in S3 is a device that's doing nothing. It can't receive calls. It can't process work. Desktop Activity Moderator is a feature that we introduce to suppress desktop apps. We can't control how desktop apps consume hardware. Meaning, from a power perspective, if it's consuming CPU, memory, disk, all that relates to higher power. So what we've done is we have a feature called DAM that suppresses all Win32 apps. So if you have Outlook, Outlook can't check email when the device is in modern standby state. Modern Mail can, because that's a UWP app, or a modern app, as we used to call it. So every time the device is in standby state, a modern standby machine, DAM is active, which means all Win32 desktop apps behave as if the device is in S3. It can't do any work. So what are the benefits of modern standby? So I mentioned we changed the name to modern standby because it's both connected and disconnected. We don't believe this is applicable anymore, as most Wi-Fi parts are capable of delivering connected standby experience. But again, it's an OEM choice. It's no longer Microsoft requiring you to build a connected or disconnected standby. That's an OEM choice. So I'm gonna walk through each of these scenarios in detail in the next few slides. But what you can see here is that these modern scenarios that you're probably used to in your phone can be done on an S3 device. So I'll start with Wake on Voice. For those of you that were here, you heard Terry and Naveen talk about Wake on Voice, Cortana Wake on Voice on Intel modern standby devices. If your device is S3, Cortana can't hear you. Everything's suspended. For a modern standby, even though the device is in sleep state, when you say, "Hey Cortana, what's the weather today?" Cortana will respond to you and then go back to sleep after performing that task. Wake and fingerprint authentication. Today on an S3 machine, you have to wake up the device and then put your finger or swipe your finger over a fingerprint reader. With a modern standby device, the screen is off, the device appears to be asleep, you just put your finger, wakes it up, and authenticates at one action, really quick. Wake and companion device framework. You also heard about all these, I think from Chris McMillan talked about this yesterday. I could use my watch or my phone as my authentication device. So not only, you know, as soon as I walk up to my modern standby device, it resumes and authenticates based on what device I have that's authenticated with my main PC. Sync with Bluetooth devices. My Fitbit right here, with my Fitbit app running on my modern standby device, as soon as I walk within proximity of Bluetooth range, my Fitbit app is already updated with my stats here on my Fitbit band. Consumer device encryption. This is something that a lot of people are unaware. Every modern standby device out there has free disk encryption. You may know of this as BitLocker, which is only available in Pro and Enterprise SKUs. Device encryption is available even on home SKUs if a modern standby device is detected. That means if you have a Microsoft account or some password defined in that device and you lose that device, the only way a hacker can get to your data is if they know your password. Otherwise, everything in that device is encrypted. They could move that hard drive, they could move that SSD to another machine, and they can't see anything, just like you can't see a BitLock hard drive. Windows is up to date. This one, I just experienced this this week. Somehow the internet connection here in the hotel is very slow. I placed my Surface Book on modern standby state. The next morning, it had the latest build installed on it. I didn't have to keep it awake. It was asleep, but at the same time connecting to Windows Update and downloading whenever there's an opportunity to download updates. Screen off audio playback. Whether you're listening to Groove Music, Pandora, or iHeartRadio, when you place the device on sleep, it's still playing. Very low power state. So if you tried to do this in S3, power consumption would be 3, 4, maybe even 5-fold on an S3 device. Skype calls, like I mentioned earlier. You can receive a Skype call even though your device is in a sleep state. Can't do that with an S3 device. Email and calendar, these are the modern email and calendar apps, not Outlook. Push notification, whether it's a Facebook app or some app that receives notification, all that is active. So we've been working a lot with Intel for the past couple of years. And we have a bunch of enablement box. I don't expect you to take notes. I believe all of this will be posted online. There's a bunch of links in here. It's intentionally, they're all small fonts. A lot of documentation from us. Tests and tools. So there's documents. There's tools that will help you validate. And then there's complementary docs from Intel. And complementary tests and tools from Intel. We've been really working closely to make sure that you have the easiest path in developing modern standby devices. And I'll talk more about other things that we're doing with Intel later in my talk. Tips on validating PowerFloor. There's some commands. Again, you're going to get all this, so it's kind of hard to take that. You know, maybe it'll appear in your photo. But there's some tips in here on how to validate the PowerFloor. Since the device is always running, you don't want that to have a high PowerFloor. You want that to be as low as possible. Otherwise, the device will not make it overnight or will not make it past several days while in a sleep state. And that's not good. So modern standby call to action, please continue collaborating with your silicon partner. Whether you're doing an Intel design or some other design, work with them. They are the experts at enabling you to have the best modern standby experience. Leverage your lead design. So pick a lead design that you want to learn, and then whatever you learn from that, you apply on your other design. So, you know, lead design, hero design, some people call it different. Utilize the tools that I just showed earlier. Those are meant to help you validate so that you can deliver really high quality devices out there. Power instrumentation. So I started with planning power from a paper perspective. Now we're kind of moving into integration and design. Instead of just jumping into, I'm just going to go build my product, chassis, plastic. Yes, it's really early, but you know, I'm just going to piece it together. Those are very expensive. Typically, this is what people have today. Fully instrumented form factor devices, very expensive. That's US dollars. Component flexibility low. What that means is you can't really swap components around in your device that easily, especially if they're soldered down. E3, and I'll talk more about what this is, energy estimation engine, it's not compatible, and I'll explain why. Scale, meaning how many of these can I build, it's low because it's very expensive. What I'm going to focus on here are these two in my talk. Intel HDK, and I have a couple slides that will walk you through that. Price alone, you're talking about a significant reduction in price while having more flexibility in validating different components from a power perspective, compatible with E3, and I'll explain why that is a great thing. Scale, it's still a couple $100, so maybe it's not as, you know, you're not going to buy several hundred of them, but you're definitely going to have a lot more than this type of device. And then the hardware power meter IC, very low cost. I can't quote quotes, and you know, you can contact the two chip providers that we have for cost. Flexibility is low because this would go into your form factor. It's kind of similar to this, but much lower cost. So first, I want to start with this Power Showdown that the Edge team, the browser team, did, I think about a couple months ago. Why this is important is how they were able to get this very accurate numbers comparing Edge power to Firefox, Opera, and Chrome is they happen to use the Surface Book device that has a power meter chip built in. So it's able, the Edge team can gather very specific data on how much power the CPU is consuming, the display, the GPU, the different components in that device, while performing a task, a given task, in the Edge browser versus a Chrome browser or the Firefox browser. And not only that, but they blogged about it. So this wasn't private, internal, Microsoft-only data. I didn't even see this until it was already out publicly. So I saw it the same exact time as the rest of you. And it's really great. So the key takeaway here is they're able to do this because of a power meter IC, this that's available on Surface Book and other OEM devices. They just happened to choose that device for their blog. So what is Energy Estimation Engine? It's an inbox service that's been available since Windows 10. provides energy usage data by a given component, an app, or a service. So it helps you understand during your integration development process on a given workload, if I choose this part versus that part, how much battery life is the user going to get? Another thing here that we want to really focus on is this part, the table. Software estimation is if you don't include a power meter chip. Best case, that's as accurate as we can guess in terms of what storage, display, and network consume. Not very accurate. With a power meter chip, you're at least 98% accurate because it is literally measuring power coming off power rails, whether it's a power rail or the Wi-Fi chip, the CPU, GPU, or a display. So there's two E3 compatible hardware chips out there. In the last WinHack, you probably only saw Maxim. Today, I'm happy to announce we have a second IHV vendor that's producing this. It's not available yet, so you're going to have to contact e3@microchip.com, or if you're interested with Maxim part, their sales at maximintegrated.com. They're the company to engage with in terms of cost, availability, implementation, and any other questions you may have related to that part. Battery saver, one of the other changes we're making is we're going to proactively inform users where there's opportunity to reduce power, thereby improving battery life. One example is we're going to do a Windows notification service that pops up. Say, hey, by the way, we've noticed three settings that you have that's decreasing your battery life. Would you like to know more? User clicks on that, and then it opens this. So here what you see are two things. One, we're calling out screen brightness set to 100%. Is that intentional? Did you want your screen brightness to be at 100%? Maybe you wanted it at one time, but you forgot to reset it back to where it should be. Oh, by the way, we also noticed that sleep is set to disable or never. Is that intentional? Or maybe, again, you set it to never at one time because you were doing something? Maybe you should set it to not never. So these are the things that we want the user to take action. We're not going to take action for them because maybe there is a specific intention of why they're doing this. So these are the things that we're going to start doing moving forward, is proactively notify the user. But in notifying the user, we're also educating the user on what they're doing that's impacting battery life. Now they know they can associate, oh, brightness equals less battery life. Oh, machine always running equals less battery life. And maybe that's true in some cases, and maybe in some cases they just don't know. So now they will know. So E3 data, if you have RS1 or RS2 or the creators update, there's this battery app here in the settings. When you click on that, it opens this. And then when you click on an app, then it expands it more. Basically, the data that this app consumes is coming from Energy Estimation Engine. We're simply scavenging it and displaying it in a nice UI. If you want to get deeper, right, as an engineer, you can run this tool. It's an inbox tool, PowerCFG, with a switch / SRUM util. And it'll basically produce a CSV file similar to this. We actually have a video that walks you through how to read this, how to convert and create a pivot table if you're not an Excel expert. So again, you're going to have all these links, and it's going to show you all the energy for each app by component. And we've been making improvements on this since the first version of Windows 10. Now, if you want to get really deep, we have what we call 300 level using the Windows Performance Analyzer tool that's available in the ADK, Assessment and Deployment Kit, where you can really visualize each component and power consumption by app in a chart form. So we've given you three ways of doing it: the really simple end user way, or the really advanced WPA way. Again, we have videos on Channel 9. We'd like to get your feedback on those videos, if they help you or not. If you have additional suggestions, feel free to put your comments on the Channel 9 video. That way we can improve and act on it the next time we revise the video. So what can you do with E3? Well, on pre-production devices, before you ship it out, you can do this for self-host. So if you do self-hosting, you build a bunch of these devices, and then you hand it out to employees for them to use in real-world scenarios, you can then mine all that data and then learn from it. You know, maybe one employee, you say, okay, you set of employees, I want you to use your devices at home and give it to your kids. Now you're going to know, I've got this set of devices, and this is the kid usage data, right? Another set of users, maybe I want you to use this as your main PC at work, et cetera, et cetera. Then you can start mining all that data and understand the impact of usage to power consumption, eventually to battery life. So Intel Hardware Development Kit. So I mentioned low cost, under 1,000. You'll have to contact your Intel representative for actual cost. Monitors up to 32 power rails. We've been working on this closely. The local Shenzhen, Microsoft, and Intel team are actually working on this project. The power meter used in this new Intel HDK kit is from Microchip. HDK will be available in early next year. If you're interested to know exact dates, pricing, again, reach out to your local Intel representative. Here's what it looks like for those of you that don't have it today. You can get a Kaby Lake and a Polo Lake HDK today. It doesn't have the Microchip part in it, but it basically kind of looks the same. It's a common core module that's got the CPU, the SoC, memory in it. And then this is your I/O board where you get to do plug and play. Compare different Wi-Fi parts, compare different eMMC parts, compare different name your part. And then We're going to build the software that then takes all this E3 data and provides it to you in an easy consume way. Then you can compare. How does part A compare to part B? If I assemble it the way I really want to build my design, am I going to get to 10 hours of battery life on a given workload? So you don't have to build your form factor. You could start with this kit and be able to project and simulate and understand exactly what you have to do from a development and design perspective. There's a bunch of tools that we have. We have some assessments, so we're going to continue revising and improving these assessments. And we're going to provide some additional guidance where you can do some manual measurement based on a certain given workload. You may have a specific workload selling to a specific customer, a vertical customer, and you only want to build that workload in your own lab. So you can do that, and we're going to build videos that will help you analyze and measure those things. Some tools. MXA basically helps you analyze power, where it's coming from, and also if certain power saving features are properly turned on. Like, for example, if you have a 48 hertz panel and you're doing video playback, is your panel really running at 48 or is it still running at 60? Because you do get a benefit in terms of power if your panel is running at a low refresh rate. We have all this video on Channel 9 that will walk you through how to use MXA to analyze and validate certain scenarios. Power CFG is an inbox tool. Again, we have a bunch of links here, Channel 9, on how to read the output of Power CFG with a wax sleep study switch. All of these are Channel 9, really easy to consume videos. Windows performance on the analyzer. So I mentioned earlier, not only can you use this for E3, but you could also use this to analyze power, where it's coming from, who's using it, and why. Who's consuming the CPU? I see that CPU is consuming this much power, but who's using the CPU. Windows Performance Recorder is a manual way of recording traces. If you want to have a very specific workload, you start the recorder, you perform your action, and then you stop the recorder, and then you can analyze the captured data using either WPA or MXA. So call to action, there's a Channel 9 video to validate that you have audio offload enabled. This gives you 5% improvement in battery life from what we've seen on average. If you can get the same panel for the same price at a low, that supports lower refresh rate, go for it. That gives you free battery life. Validate MPO and iFlip. This is typically something that we do with Intel and AMD and NVIDIA. So nothing really that's actionable for you. Power monitoring solutions, as I mentioned, strongly recommend you consider either the HDK or the Microchip Maxim and integrate the power meter IC in your device. But I would say strongly recommend start with the Intel HDK to get you started. That is the easiest path for you to understand where my power is coming from. So now I'm going to switch topics a little bit and talk about perf. So we're going to make a lot of improvements to improve UWP app launches. UWP only, not Win32. That's where our focus is, and that's where we want it to be really responsive. Edge will continue to work on perf and power so that we continue to be the best in perf and power browser out there. We're going to continue to improve boot and shutdown on-off transition. Instant on, if it's a modern standby device, that resume latency, we want that to be as quick and very little as possible. We're also going to improve some interactions with start menu and store launch, and not so much performance, but more reliability and consistency. So I'm going to walk you through some best practices. There's, a lot of these things are online. For out-of-box experience, this is the first time you boot the machine after you buy it. There's a couple of things here that you can do as an OEM that will improve that. You know, whenever I buy a new machine, I'm so excited to take it out of the box and turn it on so that I can just play with it. You know, it doesn't matter if it's an appliance, you know, a machine, a PC, name your electronics, right? People get excited. So if they have to wait 10 minutes or 5 minutes before they can use the machine, that first impression is not really not that great. You want that first impression to be, wow, I really bought a great machine here. And I'm going to tell everyone about it. More data on how to analyze this, but this should be as quick as possible. You don't want to introduce anything that slows down the machine on the first time the user turns it on. On-off transition, firmware post time, we continue to see this. This is basically before firmware hands it off to Windows. This is taking a long time. Engage your IBV, or if you're an IBV, please engage your OEM so that they are optimizing their firmware to not include unnecessary delays. Run once registry keys, these are for people that build images for Windows. Balance CPU, GPU, RAM. What this means is I've seen devices where they've got the fastest CPU but the slowest disk. Well, maybe that's great for certain scenarios where all they care about is processing power, but if they also do a lot of things that rely on disk load time, that's not going to create a good experience. You're only as fast as the slowest part of a device. Again, all of this information, including analysis, we have videos in Channel 9. App launch. We have a lot of recommendations here for those that build your own UWP apps in the room. Not only recommendation on how to build responsive UWP apps, but also ways for you to analyze and validate that your app is meeting your requirement. Anti-malware apps. If you include a third-party anti-malware app, make sure that it does not impact responsiveness of your device. So what we do is we baseline, and then we add things. strongly encourage you to do that also. Our recommendation is baseline is Windows Defender is part of Windows. Is that whatever anti-malware app you decide to include, it should not regress the experience by 20%. Personally, it should be, I think, less than that. Again, more data on Channel 9, blogs, Windows, that will help you analyze and validate these scenarios. Memory footprint, strong recommendation. It really hasn't changed since Windows 7. For 64-bit Windows, we still recommend 4 gig. That's not the minimum requirement. But if you want to deliver a great experience, start with 4 gigs of RAM. Additional info, again, on Channel 9, kind of a recurring theme. A lot of info is publicly available. It's not something that I'm only sharing with certain people. It's not only between me and Intel. It's me, Intel, and all of you. Assessment tools, there's a bunch of assessments available today. For each of these assessments, there's an equivalent video or training docs on MSDN. Encourage you to reach out and search those URLs. Windows Performance Recorder, I mentioned that earlier, is basically a way to manually capture traces on a given scenario, so whether it's battery or performance-related scenarios. WPA is basically the tool to then analyze the traces that you captured. So call to action, make sure that if you have any Win32 apps that are always running in the background, do they have to be running in the background? What is the purpose of that app always running in the background? Not only does it impact performance, but it will likely also impact battery life. Balance app load and hardware configuration. If you're selling hardware to maybe a gamer, of course, you're probably going to have a lot of apps that map to that user. If you're going to sell it to a consumer and you have a low-cost hardware, which typically means lower performance, you may want to balance the software load that you're going to include in that device to match your hardware. Again, more training videos on Channel 9. So how do we keep devices up to date? First, I want to talk about firmware. In the Windows service model, we want these devices to stay up to date. And these updates are not just Windows updates. A lot of these are your updates, firmware updates, and driver updates. Those are your updates that you control. How SM BIOS is populated is really key to making sure that those updates land in the right machines. In addition to update, security, which you've heard this morning from Chris Riggs, is really important. And it starts at the firmware level. Yes, we have TPM. Yes, we have Windows Defender. Yes, there's a lot of third-party anti-malware apps out there. That's all great. But in between that is firmware. And we want that to be completely secure. So SM BIOS is an industry standard driven by DMTF, Desktop Management Task Force. Key takeaway here is SM BIOS enables us to target devices accurately. So what's an SM BIOS? This is just a sampling of the types of information that you store or an OEM stores in SM BIOS. We see some machines that just show this. Not very helpful. Minimum, you should have something more specific than to be filled by OEM. Our preference is something even more accurate. Serial number actually matches the serial number that's printed on the sticker, whether it's on the box or the device itself. We do not recommend you shipping any device set like this in SM BIOS. At a minimum, please put your company name, pick a model, pick any of these things. You also need to define a unique ESRT, EFI, System Resource Table, or GUID, Globally Unique Identifier, along with all of these information. And again, having all of this information being unique makes your device literally unique. so that when you say, I have a piece of driver that only needs to go to this specific set of machines, only those machines will get it. Not the other machines that kind of look like it. So it's really, really important. Firmware update. We introduced firmware update platform since probably Windows 7, maybe going back to Vista. This is something that enables you to update your firmware through Windows Update. You know, prior to Windows 8, a lot of OEMs have their own mechanism. Mechanism means you have to have a back end. And if you need a back end, that's infrastructure cost that you've got to go deal with. You can just push your firmware up to Woo, submit it. Woo will take care in delivering that firmware to your devices as long as you have the right SMBIOS values and a unique ESRT and GUID. Additional best practices here during firmware update. This is not something that Windows controls. This is something that your code controls. You perform your update. Try not to require a lot of customer intervention when you perform a firmware update. Provide a progress status. We get a lot of feedback to say, well, I thought it kind of got stuck on something, so I manually powered my device. Well, if your firmware is not properly backed up and someone manually powered a device, that device is now a brick device. It will not turn on. Also check this. We also see a lot of these, but they don't care if the device is almost out of battery. They will still continue to flash the firmware. And in the middle of flashing the firmware, battery runs out, machine goes dead, you end up with a brick device. Not a good experience for user. Definitely a worse experience for you as an OEM because that's a service cost, a support cost, and all that means money to you. So you want to try to avoid those things. So from a planning perspective, as I mentioned earlier, start with defining unique values here. Populate that data correctly. Validate that what you decided here is really what's happening there. And then you could do some validation before you actually push a driver or a piece of firmware out in the real world. Security and firmware. A lot of this you probably heard from Chris Riggs this morning. Latest UEFI, TPM, whether it's firmware TPM or discrete TPM, you get firmware TPM free in probably almost all Intel socks. I'd go with that. Less cost. Bunch of other security features. We have a white paper on all these things in MSDN. Again, we have a set of slides at the end of this that walks you through all the URLs where you can get docs, decks, and videos. So I'm just going to click through these because I'm pretty sure you're going to get the slide, but a lot of resources in Modern Standby, E3 and PowerMeter. More resources here in addition to the resources that I shared earlier in the previous slides. Power, more power resources and training videos. Performance, automatic maintenance, task scheduler, all these things are up on MSDN. Analysis training videos for those that want to analyze where can I improve or how can I improve performance on a given device. MXA, this is glitch. You know, it is the year 2016, almost 2017, but every now and then we still see machines that can't deliver a glitch-free audio-video experience. And that should never be the case on any device. Firmware resources, I talked about SMBIOS, UEFI right here. That's the white paper that I mentioned. And then additional info on hardware compatibility. And that's all I have. Thank you very much.